Biscuits stubbornly refused to eat anything, but he did finally come out of the back room after Lucinda was gone and accept a cup of coffee. He sat down at the desk to sip the strong black brew.
You know Devery's gonna kill all of us, don't you?
He might try. I don't mean he'll succeed.
I still don't see why you're doing this. What do you hope to gain from it?
They stole our horses and all our gear. You have to do something about that.
So you're going to try to take their town away from them?
Something like that.
Plus, it's just the right thing to do. Folks around here deserve better than to have the Devries taking advantage of them. There's a good chance they've gotten away with murder more than once, and that just can't stand.
Oh, people get away with murder all the time. You going to clean up the whole world, Creel?
Nope. Just this little corner of it.
Oh, you put me in a hell of a bind. Devery's not gonna trust me now.
He never trusted you. If he did, he wouldn't have tried to keep you drunk all the time by slipping you extra money for whiskey.
Oh, speaking of whiskey, just a taste. Just one damn taste.
Not yet. You need to be away from the stuff for a while before you try to handle it again. You may not be able to even then.
Oh, you're meaner than a damn Comanche.
You'll thank me later.
Don't count on it.
It was time for Bo and Scratch to make the morning rounds. But before they left, they searched the sheriff's office for more bottles of whiskey that Biscuits might have stashed here and there. They found several, and Scratch gathered them up in his arms as the Texans prepared to leave.
What are you going to do with that stuff? I paid for it with my own money. I need it. You got no right to steal it like this.
We're not stealing it. We're just keeping it for you for the time being. Maybe you get it back sometime.
I'm your boss, you know. I give the orders around here, not you.
If you have any orders concerning the law business, you go right ahead and tell us what they are. But we're taking this booze away because we're your friends, not your deputies.
I don't remember asking you to be my friends, damn it.
Well, sometimes friendship is forced upon us.
Oh, go on, get out. And if you really want to do me a favor, get on your horses and ride out of Mankiller and don't ever come back.
You know, that reminds me, we'd best go talk to Edgar and make sure he's got our horses back from his brother.
Good idea. If the prisoners get restless, you can tell them that we'll bring back some breakfast for them in a little while.
Yeah, fine.
Once they were in the street and out of earshot, Scratch turned to his companion.
You know, it's fixing to get a lot worse for that gent. He's gonna be sicker the longer he's without his tonic.
I know. I wish one of those cells was empty. It'd be better if we could just lock him up until he's over the worst of it. Unless we stay there and watch him every minute of the time, he can slip out and find something to drink. We may not be able to help him at all.
But we can try. Is that right?
I reckon it's worth it to try. What are you gonna do with those bottles?
I thought we might take them over to the hotel, see if Harlan lock them up in a safe for us. Now, they're valuables. At least old Biscuit thinks they are.
That's a good idea. Come on.
They went along the street to the Rocky Mountain Hotel, where Harlan Green was surprised, but willing to lock up the whiskey for them.
First time I ever had bottles in my safe, I think. I'm not supposed to give these back to Sheriff O'Brien. Is that it?
He shouldn't even know that you have them. But if he comes asking about them, just deny knowing anything. We'll take the responsibility.
Fine. You know, after the attempt on Deputy Morton's life, last night was about as quiet as any we've had around here for a while. I think maybe the two of you have gotten the town so shaken up already that folks are more likely to behave themselves.
Maybe, but I wouldn't count on that lasting.
From the hotel, they walked up to Edgar's livery stable. Edgar Devery was standing in front of the barn as they approached. He cut his eyes back and forth, as if wondering if he ought to go and hide from them, but in the end, he stayed where he was and gave Bo and Scratch a curt nod as they came up to him.
Your horses are back in their stalls. My brother didn't like it at all, but he went along with it.
Good. We won't have to arrest you for horse theft then.
That trumped-up charge never would have stuck.
I don't reckon we'll ever know. Has any of our other gear shown up?
Now that's something I don't know a damn thing about. I didn't mess with anything except those horses. You'll have to take up the other with somebody else.
Like Luke and Thad?
Thad's already in jail. Maybe we could convince him to talk.
You hurt that boy and you'll regret it. He's my son, and I won't stand for him being mistreated.
Yeah, I can tell how concerned you are about him by the fact that you ain't ever even paid him a visit since he's been locked up.
I don't cotton much to jails. Fact is, them iron bars give me the fantods.
Oh, been on the wrong side of them before, have you?
Huh? That ain't none of your business. I'll be by to see Thad sometime. You just make sure he's fed and took care of proper-like, or you'll answer to me.
He'll be taken care of, but it might go a little easier for him if he confessed to the other things he's done that he shouldn't have.
Talk to him, not to me.
Bo took out one of the bills Lucinda had given them.
Here, put this on our account, too. We'll be a man-killer for a while, so I suppose we might as well leave our horses here.
I figured you'd want to move them horses to one of the other stables.
You'll feed and water them properly, won't you?
Well, sure. I never mistreated an animal. Not in my whole life.
There you go. Take the money, Edgar.
The liveryman still hesitated, but after a moment, he lifted his hand and took the bill from Bo. As he tucked it into a pocket of his overalls, he gave the Texans a surly nod.
Obliged.
As they walked away, Scratch gave Bo a puzzled frown.
What'd you do that for? I figure we take the horses down to Dabney's place. He'd probably take care of them for free since he's one of the bunch who wanted us to be deputies.
I'm sure he would have. But maybe by leaving him with Edgar, we've planted a seed that tells him we're not as bad as he thinks we are.
We arrested his boy. And I don't reckon he's ever gone against his brother in his life. You ain't gonna turn him against Jackson, Bo.
Maybe not, but it doesn't cost much to try.
Scratch didn't argue, but the way he shook his head made it clear that he thought Bo was wasting time and money on the effort. They walked around the rest of the town. It was early enough in the day that the saloons, brothels, and gambling dens weren't doing much business, although none of them were actually closed. The general stores, owned by Abner Maiden and Lionel Gaines, had plenty of customers, though, and the Texans saw several men going into Wallace Kane's assay office to have the ore they'd gouged out of the hillsides checked for gold. Lyle Rushford stood in front of the Colorado Palace Saloon. He nodded to Bo and Scratch as they came along the street.
Morning, deputies. Any more trouble last night after that shooting at the hotel?
No, it was quiet.
Well, I'm not surprised. Nobody kicked up a ruckus in my place, and since it's the biggest saloon in Mankiller, some sort of hell-raising usually goes on. I haven't even heard about anybody being found in an alley with his throat cut and his poke gone this morning.
Does that happen very often?
Yeah, more often than I'd like to think about. The murders here in town haven't averaged one a night, but the number is too close to that for comfort.
I hope we can put a stop to that. But there's only two of us, and we can't watch everywhere all the time. What we may have to do is close some of the worst places down.
Well, that won't make you any friends.
Well, we didn't take the job to make friends.
They moved on to the cafe, where they met blonde Tess Bonner coming out of the door with a tray in her hands.
My mother asked me to take this food over to the jail for the prisoners.
Better let me go with you.
I'll go on in and talk to Ms. Bonner.
That's fine. We need to start getting an election organized, and I'm sure she can be a big help with that.
Bo started across the street with Tess. When they reached the sheriff's office, he opened the door for her. As soon as they entered, the sharp tang of whiskey hit Bo's nose. Biscuits was slumped forward on the desk again, out cold. An empty bottle lay near his hand. Obviously, they hadn't searched hard enough, Bo thought. Biscuits had had an extra bottle scrolled away somewhere.
Oh, my goodness. Is the sheriff all right?
No, but he will be. Even if we have to kill him to make it that way. Why don't you wait outside, Ms. Bonner? I'll help Sheriff O'Brien lie down on a cot in the back room.
That's not necessary on my account, Mr. Creel. You don't have to protect my delicate sensibilities. I've seen men passed out from drinking before. We've lived in Mankiller for a while, and it's really not that unusual a sight.
I suppose not. I'll just take this to the prisoners. I'll bring the tray and the plates back later. You don't have to come in.
Again, not necessary.
Bo shrugged and went around her to open the cell block door.
Damn it! It's about time you bastards fed us!
Bo stepped into the aisle between the cells, drew his Colt, and pointed it at Reuben and Simeon.
I don't know which of you men said that, but there's a lady present, and you'll keep a civil tongue in your head. You understand?
Sure, deputy. Didn't mean nothing by it.
The stink from Thad fouling himself the night before still lingered in the air. Bo looked over at the other cell and saw Thad sitting on the floor, leaning against the wall with a dull, dispirited look on his face. Bo knew they'd have to clean him up and get some clean clothes on him somehow. Thad's father ought to be the one to handle that, Bo decided, whether Jails gave him the fantods or not.
Miss Bonner, just put that tray down on the desk. You don't want to come back here, and I mean it.
They got one of them pretty Bonner girls to bring us breakfast.
Forget it. She's not coming back here, and you're not going to say one word to her.
You're a cruel man, deputy.
Bo went out into the office, where Tess had placed the tray on the desk.
You sure you don't want me to take it to them?
I'm positive. Thank you, though, and thank your mother for me as well for providing the food. Now, if you want to head back over to the cafe, stay here.
Bo stepped out onto the street, drawing his Colt, and took off quickly toward the sound of the screaming. From the corner of his eye, he saw Scratch emerging from the cafe and knew that his old friend had heard the screams, too. The silver-haired Texan loped across the street to join Bo.
You got any idea what that commotion's about?
Not one. I think it's coming from that alley up there, though.
As Bo and Scratch reached the alley mouth, they saw that it ran all the way through to Grand Street on the other end, where the unknown trouble was taking place. As the Texans started through the alley, Bo saw a woman on her knees next to a huddled, shapeless figure. Bo and Scratch came up to her as a crowd began to gather in Grand Street near the alley mouth. Bo saw that the shape on the ground was a man lying on his back. A dark pool of blood surrounded his head. The blood had come from his throat, which had been slashed deeply from one side to the other in a wound that resembled a hideous, grinning mouth. Scratch reached down to take hold of the screaming woman's arms.
All right, ma'am, come on away from there. Now you've got to settle down, ma'am.
She tried to pull away from him, but he was too strong. He lifted her to her feet.
Oh, come on.
She turned abruptly and clutched at him, pressing her face against his chest as she began to sob.
Anybody know who these folks are or what happened here?
That's Duke Mayo. He's a gambler, plays at the Fantan most of the time.
Bo nodded grimly. He and Scratch had passed by the Fantan while they were making their rounds, and he'd heard about the place. It was a dive, a gambling den, in a particularly squalid stretch of such establishments along Grand Street, which hardly lived up to its name in places.
What about the woman?
I think she's a whore at Janie, something like that. I wouldn't know for sure. I don't have no truck with women like that.
Ma'am, do you know anything about what happened here?
No. Duke and I, we were supposed to get together for breakfast, like we always do, before we turned in for the day. But he didn't show up, so I went looking for him.
I reckon you found him like this. You and him were friends?
He was my husband.
There.
You say he played at the Fantan?
Most of the time, or so I've heard. I don't frequent places like that either.
Oh, stop worrying so much. We're not going to go tell your old lady what you've been doing.
Better be going now.
Somebody needs to help this lady.
That caused the crowd to break up even faster. Bo was disgusted. He wasn't sure what they were going to do with Janie or Jenny or whatever her name was.
Let me take her.
The Texans turned and looked back along the alley. They saw Lucinda Bonner standing there, trailed by her daughters.
We'll take her back over to the cafe and see if we can't calm her down.
I don't know if you want to do that.
Don't tell me what I do or don't want to do, Bo Creel. I'm sure that you and Scratch have business to attend to, so let me help.
Scratch gently disengaged himself from the soiled dove and turned her around, steering her toward Lucinda. He was obviously glad to be free from the responsibility.
We're much obliged, ma'am. If you wouldn't mind, could you see to it that somebody fetches the undertaker? We gotta find out what happened to this fella.
We got a pretty good idea what happened. What we need to do now is find out who did it.
Lucinda got an arm around the woman's shoulder and led her away, helped by Callie and Tess. Bo and Scratch went the other way, stepping out onto Grand Street.
We're gonna have a talk with the folks at the Fantan?
That's where we'll start.
The Fantan was a smallish building made of chunks of red sandstone with a red slate roof. It was located between a couple of larger buildings, a whorehouse much less fancy than Bella's place to the right, and a barn with a wagon yard behind it to the left. The door to the Fantan was painted a surprising shade of green. It stood a couple of inches ajar, indicating the place was open. There were no windows in the front wall. As far as Bo and Scratch could tell, it didn't have any windows at all. But that was all right, because the people who frequented the gambling den weren't really interested in seeing the light of day. Bo pushed the door back and went inside. Scratch followed close behind him. Both men had their hands near their guns, ready to hook and draw. The air inside the Fantan was stale with a mixture of smells. Tobacco smoke, beer, bay rum, and unwashed human flesh were dominant, underlaid with the mingled reek of vomit and piss. The place was dimly lit by a couple of hanging lanterns that flickered as the open door made the air stir sluggishly. Bo saw poker tables, a roulette wheel, faro and keno layouts. A short bar ran along the left wall. The chunky, bald-headed man behind the bar wore a dirty apron and stifled a yawn as he looked at the two newcomers. The poker tables were empty, except for one, where a pair of men in seedy suits sat playing a desultory game of showdown. They weren't betting, just turning over cards, and neither man seemed to give a damn whether he won or lost each hand. Scratch kept his eye on the two card players while Bo went over to the bar.
Something I can do for you?
You know a man called Duke Mayo?
Sure, I know Duke. He plays in here sometimes.
Seen him lately?
Why are you looking for him? He in some kind of trouble?
Not a bit. Was he in here last night?
Yeah, sat in on a game that lasted most of the night. Cashed in and left here maybe 3 hours ago.
Wasn't quite a bit, did he?
I'm busy serving drinks most of the time. I don't keep up with how the games are going.
Before Bo could ask any more questions, a door in the back of the room opened and a man came out carrying a bucket and a mop. He was short and frail looking, with wispy gray hair and a face ravaged by time and liquor. He wore gray striped pants and a shirt that had once been white, and he kept his eyes lowered as he set the bucket down and started mopping the floor.
Anybody leave out of here right after mail?
Look, Deputy, I told you, I do my own work and mind my own business. I didn't see nothing or hear nothing, and I don't know a damn thing except that I'm sleepy. I can't help you. You understand?
Were they part of the same game as Mayo?
Why don't you ask them yourself?
All right, I will. What's your name?
Ashton. Mike Ashton.
You own this place?
That's right.
Might be a good idea for you to start being a little more observant about what goes on in your business, Ashton.
That just shows how much you know, mister.
Bo turned away from the bar, stepped around the elderly swamper, and went over to the table where the game of showdown continued. The two gamblers deliberately ignored him and Scratch.
We'd like to talk to you, gents.
Go ahead and talk.
That don't mean we'll listen, though.
Bo leaned forward and used his left hand to sweep the cards off the table and onto the floor. His right palmed out the Colt and he eased back the hammer.
This means you'll listen and that you'll talk, too.
Both men stiffened in their chairs and started reaching under their coats. The cocking of Scratch's gun stopped them. Caught between the two weapons, the men froze, then slowly moved their hands back into plain sight.
On the table.
They placed their hands on the ratty green felt and glared up at the Texans with murderous hatred.
What do they call you?
I'm Stansbridge.
Keegan.
All right. Were either of you in the game Duke Mayo was playing in last night?
We both were.
How'd he do?
He cleaned up.
Took your dinero, did he?
You win, you lose. That's the nature of the game.
Did you take it unkindly when you lost?
Didn't bother us a bit.
If you're accusing us of something, Deputy, why don't you just come right out with it?
All right, I will. Did you follow Mayo when he left here, cut his throat, and steal back the money he won?
Of course not. We've been right here. We haven't set foot out of the place in more than 12 hours. Isn't that right, Mike?
That's right. They've been sitting right there, Deputy.
I thought you didn't pay any attention to what was going on in here.
Some things I see, some things I don't. But I know those two haven't left, just like they told you.
All right. I'm putting you on notice, though, Ashton. If we hear about any trouble in this place, we'll shut it down. You understand?
I heard about you two coming into town and acting like you're running things now. The Deveries will settle your hash. You just hide and watch.
Don't forget what I said.
Oh, no!
As Bo and Scratch turned toward the door, the swamper's foot suddenly bumped against the bucket and upset it. Dirty, soapy water spilled out onto the floor. The old man jumped back.
You damn old fool! Clean that mess up right now, you hear me? I don't know why I keep you around here in the first place.
I'm sorry, Mike. I'm sorry. I'll go get another bucket of water. Clean it up right now.
The swamper grabbed the bucket and headed for the back door. Back out in the street, the two friends paused in front of the Fantan.
Bo, you know damn well those two killed that fella Mayo.
I expect you're right. As long as Ashton backs her story, though.
Psst, psst. The Texans turned to see the old swamper standing at the corner of the building. He beckoned to them with a palsied hand. Bo and Scratch looked at each other and frowned. Then Bo shrugged, and they went over to see what the swamper wanted.
What can we do for you, mister?
Are you boys really lawmen?
Yeah, but I ain't sure you should call us boys. I mean, hell, I bet you ain't that much older than us.
It ain't the years so much as it is the miles.
We put plenty of those behind us, too. Now, what was it you wanted to tell us?
Well, I heard you asking about Duke Mayo. I was in there when he cashed in from that game and left. It was just a couple minutes after that when them other two, Stansbridge and Keegan, left, too. They lied to you about that, and so did Ashton.
You'd swear to that in court?
I don't know. I knocked that bucket over on purpose so I could come tell you about it, but I don't like the idea of standing up in court and saying the same thing.
Well, you don't have to worry about Ashton and those gamblers. They'd be arrested by then. They couldn't hurt you.
Yeah, but what if they used to get loose for some reason? A jury might set them free, even though everybody would know they was guilty.
Tell you what. We'll arrest the three of them and tell them we have a witness, but we won't say anything about who it is. Maybe once they're behind bars, they'll go ahead and confess.
Maybe.
We'll do everything we can to protect you. Sooner or later, somebody's got to stand up for what's right. That's the only way we can bring law and order to Mankiller.
All right. Let me get back in there before you come in, though, so they won't have as much reason to think it was me you've been talking to.
Sure, we can do that.
How come you want to see him get what's coming to him? They treat you bad?
Ashton's a jackass and pison mean. The other two ain't much better. But Duke, he always had a kind word for me and slipped me a little dinero now and then. For a tin-horn gambler, he weren't a bad sort. Had a wife, too, a gal named Janie, and she's pretty nice for a whore. Folks go down some wrong trails sometimes. I've done it myself more often than I like to think about, but that don't mean they're bad sorts.
You're right about that, amigo. Now get back in there with your bucket, and we'll wait a few minutes before we arrest those varmints.
The swamper nodded and turned to hurry back toward the back of the building. He disappeared behind the fantan.
You know, I just thought of something. We only got two cells in the jail, and they got prisoners in them already. If we arrest Ashton, Stansbridge, and Keegan, where are we going to put them?
That's a problem, all right. If we're going to clean up this town, we'll need more space for prisoners. I'll have to talk to Lucinda and some of the others about that. For now, though, I think I saw a smokehouse with a pretty sturdy door on it. We can put them in there and lock it up.
That sounds good to me. Now let's go educate those hombres about how they oughtn't go around cutting people's throats.
Three out of the four men in the fantan looked surprised when Bo and Scratch came back into the gambling den. The swamper kept his eyes downcast and watched his mop making damp circles on the floor, but there was nothing unusual in that.
Forget something?
Yeah, we did. We forgot to arrest these two four-flushers for murdering and robbing Duke Mayo.
Damn it, we told you we haven't been out of here for hours.
And Mike backed us up on that.
Yeah, but we got a witness who says that all three of you are lying.
Witness? What witness?
Never mind about that. You'll find out all about it later. We're taking these two to jail, and you're coming along too, Ashton. You lied to a peace officer, and that's against the law.
But I'm not going anywhere.
We'd rather you came along peaceable-like, but one way or another, you're under arrest, too.
The hell with this. You two are about to wind up dead in an alley just like Mayo.
Damn it!
We didn't say anything about where Mayo's body was found. How would you know it was in an alley, Keegan, if you didn't have something to do with him dying there?
Keegan sprang to his feet. His hand darted under his coat and came out with a pocket pistol. Stansbridge surged up from his chair. He thrust his arms out, twisting his forearms as he did so, and a pair of derringers leaped into his hands from under his sleeves, where they had been concealed in spring-loaded sheaths. Bo and Scratch were moving too, splitting up and slapping leather at the same time. Both shots that crashed out from Scratch's gun found their target. The slugs drove deep into Keegan's chest and knocked him back, off his feet. A bullet from Bo's gun punched into Stansbridge's midsection. He doubled over in agony, hunched above the table. He collapsed on the table and began bleeding on the green felt. Ashton had grabbed a sawed-off shotgun from under the bar and was pointing at them.
Look out!
The Texans both swung around. Before Ashton could pull the triggers, the Swamper brought his mop up and struck the barrels of the deadly scattergun with the handle. That knocked the weapon up enough so that the double load of buckshot went over the heads of Bo and Scratch and tore into the ceiling and the wall behind them instead. Slugs from both Colts smashed into Ashton and sent him stumbling back against the shelves of liquor behind the bar. The shattering bottles filled the room with the overpowering smell of spilled booze. It mingled with the acrid tang of gun smoke as Ashton dropped the shotgun, flopped forward onto the hardwood, and then slid off to land behind the bar. Bo hurried to the end of the bar so that he could cover the man, although he had a hunch Ashton wasn't a threat anymore. Seeing the sightless eyes staring at the ceiling, Bo knew he was right. Ashton was dead. So were Stansbridge and Keegan. Scratch had made sure of that.
His 10 horns have crossed the divide, Bo.
So is Ashton. Are you all right, mister?
Yeah, I reckon so. I didn't get hit by any of those shots. You're sure Ashton's dead?
I'm sure.
That's a lot of whiskey going to waste soaking into the floor like that.
Yeah, but only a man with no dignity left at all would get down and try to lap it up like a dog. You're better than that, amigo. You proved it by telling us what you knew about Duke Mayo's murder.
Yeah, I reckon you're right. Well, still, it's a mortal shame to see all that whiskey spilled.
Oh, I agree with you. Nothing we can do about it, though.
The shots had drawn some attention. Bo and Scratch had left the door standing halfway open when they came back in, and now a couple of curious townsmen poked their heads in.
I'd be obliged if one of you gents would let Sam Barfield know that his services are needed here, too.
Hey, what happened?
The man who murdered Duke Mayo got what was coming to them. And so did the man who tried to cover up for them and then threw down on a couple of lawmen.
You take a good look, boys, and then spread the word. That's what's going to happen to hombres who figure on breaking the law and man-killer.
The two men looked at the corpses with big eyes, then disappeared. One of the men had probably gone to alert the undertaker that he was needed, as Bo had requested, and the other was probably going to be busy spreading the news about the shootout in the Fantan.
Well, this solves one problem.
What's that?
Well, now we don't have to figure out where we're going to lock up these varmints.
True enough. You can't just kill everybody who breaks the law, though.
No. Shoot, I suppose not. I'm glad Biscuits ain't here.
Why's that?
Because I got a hunch that no matter what you said, he'd be down on his knees behind that bar right now, lapping up those puddles of who hit John like a dog.
News of the shootout spread like wildfire from one end of Mankiller to the other. In less than 24 hours as deputies, the Texans had killed 7 men, wounded another, and arrested 3 members of the most powerful family in town, plus the shootout Scratch had had with the bushwhackers at the hotel. People couldn't stop talking about how the new lawmen were going to either clean up Mankiller at last, or be dead before they had a chance to do anything else. When they got back to the sheriff's office, Biscuits O'Brien was still asleep on the cot in the back room. Bo and Scratch got him up and forced him to drink black coffee until he was reasonably awake, if not sober. He refused to reveal where he'd had the extra bottle of whiskey hidden. Short of beating it out of him, the Texans didn't know what else to do. Reuben and Simeon yelled complaints from the cell block, but Bo and Scratch ignored them. Bo left Scratch there to keep an eye on things and went to pay a visit to Edgar Devery.
You need to come down to the jail.
Hear
me out. Your boy Thad's in a bad way.
Is that wound in his arm festering up? Dang you, deputy!
His arm's fine, but he messed himself last night and he needs some clean clothes.
Well, that ain't my responsibility.
He's your son. Nobody else is going to take care of him.
His sister will.
His sister? You'd send a man's sister in to help him clean up after something like that? What kind of man are you, Edgar?
All right. Damn it, quit pestering me. I'll go up to the house and get him some clean clothes. Then I'll be down to the jail after a while.
Thanks, and I'm sure Thad will be grateful to you, too.
I wouldn't count on it. Boy's as mean and surly as a bear with a toothache.
I didn't know you had a daughter. In fact, I haven't seen any female Devries.
Yeah, name's Myra. She don't come out much. Mostly she stays in her room on the second floor. Poor gal ain't quite right. She'd rather be shut up reading books and such like. Seems sort of embarrassed about being a member of the family.
From what he had seen of them so far, Beau would have said that Myra Devery might just be the sanest one of them all if she felt like that. He wasn't sure if Edgar would live up to his promise or not, but true to his word, the liveryman showed up at the jail that afternoon with some clean clothes, a handful of rags, and a bucket of water. Scratch patted him down to make sure he wasn't trying to smuggle a weapon to the prisoners. Then they let him go into the cell block. Scratch unlocked Thad's cell and then relocked the door behind Edgar. The liveryman called to be let out half an hour later.
Ought to smell better in there now.
Well, we can dang sure hope so.
The one drawback to having Edgar come in and help Thad clean up was that he got to take a good look at the jail and its defenses, such as they were. Beau still expected an attempt to free the prisoners, maybe as soon as that night. However, the night passed quietly. The Texans took turns sleeping and standing guard, just as they had taken turns going across the street to the cafe for meals. Lucinda reported how everybody was talking about them and how there was a sense of law and order growing suddenly in Mankiller that the citizens had never experienced before. The next night, the Texans were summoned to one of the town's saloons where a couple of drunken miners were brawling. Beau left Scratch at the jail and answered the call for help. As soon as he pushed the bat wings aside and stepped into the saloon, everything fell still. The two men who'd been wrestling on the floor picked each other up and quickly started righting the tables and chairs they'd knocked over. They weren't completely sober, but they weren't nearly as drunk as they had been a few minutes earlier, either.
We're sorry, Deputy Creel.
Yeah, don't know what came over us. We got to arguing, just got carried away, mate.
Oh, we'll pay for any damages.
Well...
Beau looked at the proprietor, who nodded his agreement to the suggestion.
All right. But next time, find some way to settle your argument without causing any trouble.
Yes, sir, Deputy.
We sure will.
Outside the saloon, Beau paused and shook his head. A reputation as a town-taming lawman nobody wanted to cross was one thing he'd never figured on having. It seemed to be pretty effective, though. Over the next week, he and Scratch found out just how effective. After the extraordinarily violent first 24 hours on the job, the next 7 days were relatively trouble-free. There were no murders, the first time in memory that an entire week had gone by without a killing, and only a few fights broke out that the Texans had to break up. The Deveries also seemed to be lying low. Jackson Devery didn't make any more appearances demanding that his sons and nephew be released. The prisoners complained incessantly, but they seemed to be getting used to being behind bars. Edgar visited Thad a few times, which perked up the young man. He began to get some of his natural piss and vinegar back, which Beau wasn't sure was a good thing. Thad's sister Myra came to visit him too. She was a pale, blonde young woman who spoke in a shy half-whisper when she said anything at all and kept her eyes downcast. Her visits seemed to lift Thad's spirits too. Beau was convinced she was the person he'd seen peeking out through the curtains in the second-floor window of the old Devery house. With one of the Texans keeping an eye on him nearly all the time, Biscuits O'Brien had suffered the torments of the damned. He had been sick at his stomach, he'd had the shakes, he had been drenched in a cold sweat. But by the time a week had gone by, he was sober, and mad as hell about that fact. He was complaining about that very thing one afternoon when the office door opened and Lucinda Bonner came in. Beau and Scratch were straddling ladder-back chairs, but they stood up instantly and nodded to her.
Ma'am?
You boys are too polite.
Well, that's our Texas upbringing. My ma would have kicked me from heck to Goliad if I didn't stand up when a lady entered a room.
Mine too.
Well, that's nice of you, but you can sit down and relax. I brought something I want you to see.
She had a stack of papers in her hand. They looked like handbills of some sort, Beau thought, and as Lucinda held one up, he saw that he was right. The printing was big and bold and read, Election, June 5th, Colorado Palace Saloon. Vote, Mrs. Lucinda Bonner for mayor, Dr. Jason Weathers, Harlan Green, Sam Bradfield, Wallace Kane for town council, Colonel Horace McCauley for judge. Vote for progress. Vote for law and order. Vote for Mankiller's future.
Well, that ought to do it.
It didn't take long either. Lucinda paid a couple of local boys to nail the handbills up around town, and as soon as they started appearing, folks began to talk. It was like a tidal wave of sensation washed over Mankiller. Everybody was talking about the impending election, which was only a week away. Bo was in the cafe, having a cup of coffee, when the door opened. Bo turned his head and saw Jackson Devery stalking toward the counter. He slapped one of the handbills down on the counter in front of Lucinda, who had been talking to Bo. It was torn in the upper corners where it had been ripped down.
What the hell is this?
Keep a civil tongue in your head, Devery. There's no law against cussing in town, so I can't arrest you for it. But I can give you a thrashing if I have to.
You could try, Deputy. Now listen here, Mrs. Bonner. You can't do this. It ain't legal.
Actually, it is legal, Mr. Devery. Colonel McCauley, who, as you may know, is an accomplished attorney, has advised us that the citizens of a town have the right to call an election. All it requires is that the majority of eligible voters sign a petition requesting that an election be held.
Petition? What petition?
Lucinda reached below the counter and brought up a stack of papers which she set beside the handbill.
This one. People have been signing it all week. There are copies at the general store and at the assay office, too. Once we had enough signatures, we could set the election date and candidates could declare.
I can hire lawyers, too. I'll sue you. This has got to be illegal. Mankiller is my town.
You may own the land, but that doesn't give you any sort of legal authority over the citizens. They have a right to determine their own local government. When Mankiller was awarded a post office, the state of Colorado recognized it as a town, which means everything about this election is legal, Mr. Devery.
It won't stand. It won't stand, I tell you.
Wait and see.
Looking like fire and brimstone was about to explode from him, Devery turned and stomped out of the cafe.
What do you think he's going to do?
There's nothing he can do to stop the election. From what you've told me and what you just explained to Devery, the law's on your side. If he does try to interfere, the state could come in and arrest him. Might even get some U.S. Marshals in here.
He's too smart to attract much outside attention to what he's been doing. Not unless it was a last resort, anyway. But I can't imagine that he'll just allow this to happen without trying to stop it somehow.
We'll just have to keep our eyes open. When trouble comes, we'll be ready for it.
Bo wasn't ready for what happened bright and early the next morning, though, as he left the sheriff's office to start morning rounds. He looked along the boardwalk and saw Luke Devery standing next to one of the posts holding up the awning in front of the assay office. Luke had a hammer in one hand and a sheaf of papers in the other.
What in blazes are you doing?
What's the matter, law dog? Can't you read?
Bo could read all right, and he didn't like what he read on the piece of paper Luke had just nailed to the post. Somehow, the words on the hand-lettered notice didn't surprise him. Vote Jackson Devery for mayor. Luke Devery, Reuben Devery, Simeon Devery, Granville Devery for town council. Edgar Devery for judge. Vote for the Deveries, founders of Mankiller.
You got a problem with that, deputy?
Well, I'm not sure your Uncle Edgar is qualified to be a judge.
He's fair. That's all a fella needs. And speaking of fair, you don't intend to give me any trouble over putting up these posters when you let that Bonner woman have her handbills nailed up all over town, do you?
Go ahead. Put them up on the boardwalk posts all you want. But you better get permission before you nail one onto the wall of somebody's business.
Oh, don't you worry. If I need permission for anything, I'll get it.
Luke sauntered away along the boardwalk, pausing three or four posts farther down the street to take some nails from a pocket of his overalls and put up another poster. Bo looked at the first one and studied the writing, wondering who had done the lettering. It was nice work, and he suspected that Myra Devery was responsible for it. He wasn't sure any of the others in the family had a delicate enough touch to produce something like that. By the time he got to the cafe to break the news to Lucinda, he found that she had already heard about this new development. Mankiller's grapevine was working efficiently this morning.
Can the Deverys do that? Just up and run for election against you like that?
Any citizen of Mankiller can declare himself a candidate.
Or herself.
That's probably the shakiest part of the whole proposition. Being a woman, I'm not an eligible voter. However, if I'm elected and it's set aside legally later on, the town council will have the power to appoint one of themselves as acting mayor until a special election can be held. That's what Colonel McCauley says anyway, and he knows more law than anybody else around here. So we're going to carry on as planned. Now we just have to defeat Jackson Devery and his bunch.
Yeah, that shouldn't be a problem.
Maybe more so than you think. I don't think anyone in town actually likes the Deverys, but there are people who'd like to curry favor with them, and there are plenty of people who are afraid of them. They might think it would be safer to vote for the Deverys. I wouldn't be surprised if they did something to try to make more people feel that way before the election.
Intimidate the voters, you mean?
Exactly.
That would be against the law, wouldn't it?
I would think so.
Let them try it then. They might wind up with more trouble on their hands than they bargained for.
Bo had to get on with his rounds, so he said so long to Lucinda and left the cafe. As he walked along the street, he saw a number of people gathered around the handbills that Luke Devery had put up. The Devery's entry into the election campaign had stirred up a lot of interest. Other than that, the town was quiet this morning. Another night had passed without a murder. The citizens of Mankiller might be starting to feel secure and safe for a change. Bo hoped that if that were the case, it wouldn't turn out to be a big mistake for them. When he returned to the sheriff's office, he found Biscuits O'Brien talking to Scratch.
Tell me again how all that whiskey spilled on the floor in the fan tan.
I ain't gonna do it. You know good and well it's just gonna give you nightmares, Biscuits.
Yeah, I know. I can see it in my head. I haven't been able to stop thinking about it ever since you told me.
You appear to have something on your mind, pard. What is it?
You're right. Come along back here so I'll only have to say it once. I got some news for you, boys. You probably don't know it yet, but you're running for town council in the election.
What?
I said you're running for town council. Your brother Luke is, too. He's out nailing up handbills all over town about it right now.
But that ain't possible. They're in jail.
That doesn't keep them from running. If they're elected, I figure the new judge will dismiss the charges against them.
Wait a minute. What new judge?
Their Uncle Edgar.
The damn liveryman who tried to steal our horses?
One and the same.
Well, he can't be the judge. He takes care of horses and mucks out stalls for a living.
Evidently, that doesn't disqualify him. And I'm sure that if these two get elected, it'll mean that the rest of the Devery slate won the election, too.
The rest of the Devery slate?
The old man's running for mayor. And somebody named Granville Devery is running for the other spot on the town council.
That's one of our cousins. Uncle Lester's boy.
I don't recall hearing about a Lester Devery.
That's because he's dead. Fever got him a little more than a year ago.
Sorry, I guess. I noticed they didn't put you up for election, Thad.
I'm not interested in being on any damn town council. The whole thing's loco anyway. When I get out of here, I'll show all of you who the real law is in Mankiller.
I reckon we'll see about that. Won't take long either. The election's only 6 days away.
A lot can happen in 6 days.
That evening, the group that had hired Bo and Scratch to be deputies in the first place met again. Lucinda sent word to Bo that they would like for him to be there.
Are you sure you don't mind missing out on whatever they're going to talk about?
You mean, would I rather sit in some stuffy room and listen to folks yammer about politics or stay here and play dominoes with Biscuits?
Yeah, I know how you feel about politics.
Oh, it brings out the windbag in just about anybody, even good folks like the ones we're trying to help. And when you get back, you can tell me what they said, Bo. The important stuff, anyway. That'll do me just fine.
And I don't reckon I'd be welcome. It was Pa Devery who pinned this star on me, after all.
That was when you were drinking. You're sober now.
Oh, don't I know it. And there ain't no telling how long that'll last.
It'll last.
Bo went to the cafe, which had closed early for this meeting. In addition to the group that had hired him and Scratch, Dr. Jason Weathers, Harlan Green, Colonel Horace McCauley, and several other business owners Bo had gotten to know were there. Colonel McCauley was a white-haired, white-mustachioed Virginian who tended toward expensive cigars, frock coats, and beaver top hats. He had commanded a cavalry regiment during the late unpleasantness, as he referred to the war, and had left his ruined plantation behind afterward to come west and practice law. Some of the gathering sat at the counter with their backs to the kitchen, while the others were grouped at a couple of the tables. Lucinda stood in the center of the meeting. She was the only one who didn't have coffee.
Go behind the counter and help yourself to a cup if you'd like, Bo.
Don't mind if I do.
When Bo was fortified with a cup of the strong black brew, he thumbed his hat to the back of his head and sat down on one of the stools at the counter.
We've gotten together here tonight to talk about what we're going to do about the Deveries running against our candidates.
We can't do anything about it except defeat them. What they're doing is perfectly legal, no matter how much of a consan shame and fraud it may be. I think we all know that the Deveries aren't interested in establishing any kind of legitimate local government. They just want to keep the reins of power in their own iron fists by any means possible.
Colonel, if you're going to make a speech...
That's it! That's it! We need to have a rally so that all of our candidates can get up and tell people why they should vote for our side.
I don't know. I've never been much of one for making speeches.
Yeah, nor have I.
Look, they don't have to be fancy speeches like the colonel here, say, could make. They can be simple, as long as they're sincere.
Well, I, for one, don't object to telling people how I feel. One of the things you learn as a doctor is how to give people a piece of your mind when you think they need it.
Personally, I never cared much for political rallies and all that speech fine. But they must work, or people wouldn't keep having them.
Deputy Creel's got a point, Lucinda. If we're going to beat the Deveries and finally break their hold on this town, we have to use whatever weapons are available to us, even speeches.
I suppose you're right, Sam. All right. If we're all in agreement, we'll have a rally. When?
The night before the election. You want what you say to be fresh in folks' minds when they go to vote the next day.
With the issue of whether or not to have a rally settled, they started hashing out the details, and after some discussion, they decided to hold the gathering in front of Rushford's Colorado Palace Saloon. They would build a speaker's platform at the edge of the street and hang red, white, and blue bunting on the railing that ran along the edge of the second floor balcony. Lanterns could be hung from that balcony, too, so that there would be plenty of light for the crowd to see the speakers. When they started talking about the order in which the speeches would be presented, Bo drank the last of his coffee and eased off the stool.
If you'll pardon me, gents and ma'am, I ought to get back to the sheriff's office. I think you're on the right track here, folks, but you don't really need me to help you figure out what you're going to do.
Bo wasn't quite back to the sheriff's office when a man came running out of the darkness. He didn't seem to see Bo until the Texan reached out and grabbed his arm. He recognized the man as Ernie Bond, who had brought word of the trouble the other night.
Whoa there. What's the matter, mister?
Deputy, is that you?
Yeah, what's wrong?
Well, some fellas are busting up Bella's place.
Again? Who is it this time?
A whole gang of prospectors. I don't know what set them off.
All right, thanks. We'll take care of it.
Bo hurried into the office. Scratch and Biscuits looked up from their domino game.
What's up, Bo?
Trouble. Some sort of riot over at Bella's place.
Well, more Deveries, you reckon? We don't have them all locked up yet.
No, according to what I was told, it's a bunch of prospectors causing a ruckus this time. Sheriff, can we leave you here to guard the prisoners?
By myself?
Load all three shotguns, set them on the desk. That'll give you 6 barrels full of buckshot to discourage anybody tries to get in that ain't supposed to.
Well, I suppose so.
You'll do fine. We'll be back as soon as we can.
Load those shotguns.
And bar the door behind us.
Maybe we should have brought a couple of shotguns with us. They don't call them riot guns for nothing, you know.
We'll be all right. Probably just have to talk a little tough. Those miners will settle down.
When Bo and Scratch reached the building, they had to duck as a chair came crashing out through a window just as they got there. Broken glass sprayed over the boardwalk around them.
Son of a bitch!
Reckon this might take more than a few harsh words.
Bo yanked open the elaborate front door and plunged into the whorehouse with Scratch right on his heels. Punches flew as men battled feverishly with each other in the parlor. At least a dozen combatants were involved. George, who appeared to be fully recovered from the pistol whipping he had received at the hands of the Deveries, stood at the edge of the action, obviously eager to plunge right into it. Bella was beside him, though, both hands gripped tightly around one of his muscular arms as she held him back.
You'll just get yourself hurt. Let the damn fools fight it out of their system. Deputies, do something!
If we fire a couple of shots into the ceiling, that might settle them down.
Yeah, but if any of them are packing irons, it might cause them to start shooting, too. Then we'd have a real mess here. Plus, it'd leave some holes in Bella's ceiling.
Well, what do you think we ought to do, then?
Settle this down the hard way.
Bo DeVoe stepped forward and grabbed the shoulder of a man who had stumbled backward toward him after an opponent had landed a punch in his face. Bo hauled the man around and threw a punch of his own. His fist crashed into the surprised man's jaw and drove him off his feet. The man who'd been fighting with the one Bo had just hit glared at the Texan.
He was mine!
The man lunged forward, swinging a wild roundhouse blow at Bo's head. Bo ducked under the man's fist, stepped in close, and hooked a right into the man's belly. That put him in position for the hard left hand that Bo brought up almost straight up under the chin, knocking him to the floor.
Now you're talking!
Oh, dadgummit, Miss Bella, I got to get in there!
George pulled loose from her and joined the Texans in hand-to-hand battle with the rioting miners. For several hectic minutes, Bo, Scratch, and George waded through the thick mass of struggling men. Their fists shot out to the right and left, delivering punches that landed solidly and sent men sprawling on the floor. Scratch stood toe-to-toe with a husky miner and traded punches, each man giving as good as he got for several moments before Scratch knocked his opponent cold. Bo polished off another miner, and that was pretty much it.
It looks like all of them.
It was true. Some of the men had knocked each other out, and the Texans and George had taken care of the others. A few of the men on the floor were moaning and semi-conscious, but most of them were out cold. Bo checked for pulses and found that they were all still alive. He was grateful for that anyway. The three men weren't hurt except for some bumps, bruises, and scrapes.
What started this?
I don't know. About half a dozen of those men just came in and started fighting with some of my customers. There was no reason for it that I could see unless they were carrying a grudge because of something that happened somewhere else. Unless...
Unless what?
Can you come with me, Deputy? There's something in my office I want to tell you.
Can you keep an eye on those varmints in case they start to wake up?
If they start to wake up, I'm liable to give them a little love tap with my gun butt.
Just don't bust any skulls permanent-like.
Bo followed Bella back to her office in the rear of the building. It was a small but comfortably furnished room. She motioned Bo into a leather armchair and went behind the desk.
Jackson Devery came to see me this afternoon, Deputy.
Devery? What did he want?
Devery's a lot of things, none of them good, but he's not a man who patronizes a whorehouse. No, he acted all friendly-like and asked a favor of me.
A favor?
He said he wanted me and my girls to tell every man who comes in here to vote for him and the other Deveries in the election. Said we ought to tell them that if that bunch on the other side is elected, they'll shut down all the saloons and gambling dens and houses like this one.
I doubt that would happen. I haven't heard them say anything like that, and Lyle Rushford, the owner of the Colorado Palace, is a member of the group.
I know! It doesn't seem likely to me either, and I said as much to Devery. I told him I wasn't going to mess with politics. When a man's here visiting one of my girls, last thing he wants to hear is some damn political speech.
How did Devery react to that?
The same way he reacts to just about everything. He got mad. And he said that if I didn't go along with what he wanted, I'd be sorry, Deputy. Mighty sorry.
You think Devery had something to do with what happened here tonight?
He threatened me, Deputy. There's no other way to look at it. It can't be a coincidence that he came to see me today and this fight broke out tonight after I wouldn't go along with what he wanted.
You might be right. You said those miners came in and started the fight for no reason. Maybe Devery paid them to do it or forced it some other way.
That's what I'm thinking. You know he owns all the claims around here and demands a share from the miners. Maybe he told them he'd take a bigger cut if they didn't do what he said.
Or bribed them by promising that he'd take a smaller cut. Either way, sending them here to start a fight is crooked.
What about trying to get me and my girls to tell people how to vote?
That's just electioneering. Might dirty, maybe, but not against the law. The threatening and the fighting, that's what crossed the line.
What are you going to do about it?
First things first. We got to get some proof that Devery had anything to do with this ruckus.
Bo and Bella went back to the parlor. Bo told Scratch what Bella had said, then asked the madam to point out which of the unconscious men had started the fight. When she had done so, Scratch and George dragged the men to one side of the room. George brought a bucket of water from the kitchen and threw it in their faces. Bo and Scratch had their guns drawn and showed the Colts to the men.
You fellas just take it easy. Sit there on the floor and don't try to get up.
You can't do this! We didn't do nothing!
The hell you didn't! You caused a couple $100 worth of damage and who knows how bad you hurt some of my regular customers.
We're gonna have to lock you boys up. You're under arrest for assault and disturbing the peace. and you'll stay locked up until after the election. A man killer's got a real judge who can decide what to do with you.
We can't leave our claims alone that long. Somebody'll come along and take all the gold out of them.
Uh-huh. Well, you should have thought of that before you agreed to do Pa Devery's dirty work.
From the looks of surprise that appeared on the faces of the men, Bo knew that Bella's hunch was right. Devery was behind the riot that had broken out here tonight. The miners concealed the reaction as best they could, but it was too late.
What did Devery do? Threaten to take even more of what you make from your claims, or promise to take less?
I don't know what the hell you're talking about. I ain't seen Devery in weeks.
Me neither.
You know, as long as the damage gets paid for, Deputy Morton and I might see our way clear to forgetting about the charges. That way you wouldn't have to stay locked up in a smokehouse for a week or more, and your claims wouldn't be unprotected for that long. But you'd have to be willing to testify why you came in here tonight and started a riot for no apparent reason.
It was like slamming a door. Several of the men shook their heads.
Well, you have to lock us up then, Deputy. We ain't a-talking.
All right. That's the way you want it. George, have you got a shotgun?
Yes, sir, Deputy. I sure do.
Do you mind getting it and coming with us while we lock those fellas up?
I don't mind at all. Fact is, I reckon I'll enjoy it.
Bo and Scratch searched the prisoners, removing several knives and a couple of pistols from them. Then the Texans and George marched the disgruntled prisoners down the street at gunpoint. They attracted a lot of attention along the way. When they reached the smokehouse that would serve as a makeshift jail, they herded the men inside the windowless, thick-walled structure. Earlier in the week, Bo had picked up a padlock from Abner Maiden's store and hung it on the hasp of the smokehouse door. He snapped it into place now and barred the door as well. As sturdy as the building was, the prisoners had no chance of getting out.
That's a pretty small space for half a dozen men.
I know. I don't reckon we can really leave them in there for a week or more. But they can suffer for a day or two. Maybe then they'll be more willing to talk about why they went loco at Bella's place tonight.
I ain't gonna hold my breath waiting. I reckon those hombres are plumb scared of Devery. Too scared to talk.
I'm afraid you're right.